Okay. So, good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting of the LaSalle Sands Outdoor Heritage Council's Executive Committee to order. Note, we do have a quorum present. Members, we've got an agenda before us. The principal objective is to take a look at the draft 25-year framework for the Outdoor Heritage Fund and to make a decision on whether we believe it should be released for public review. We also are going to have a little bit of time at the end to take a look, no action, but just look at the appropriation language that staff has provided for us. Members, that's the agenda as drafted. Entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as drafted. All right, any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? So we have our agenda. We need to review the minutes of the last time we met, which was way back in April 16th, 2010. Members, you should have in your packet a copy of the meeting minutes of our last executive committee. Any suggested changes to the meeting minutes as drafted? Okay, I'd entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes of April 16th, 2010 as proposed.
Make that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the meeting minutes of April 16, 2010. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have our meeting minutes. And now we are to the kind of the business at hand, which is to take a look at the most recent draft of the 25-year funding framework that you should have all received on Saturday or Friday at home. So, Bill, I'll pass it over to you, and could you guide us through this document?
I think what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is have Ginny and Heather take us through this. They've done the bulk of the work on the document based on the input that you all had. Peter Butler is here as well to provide information and answer questions. I think that there's been significant improvement to his background. It was sent to Mary Hoff, an editor, who did a considerable amount of work on it. I know you spent quite a bit of time with it yourself. It's come quite a way since we saw it last in the council. So with that, Heather and Judy.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to Judy Gruber.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, Judy.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad to see everyone made it here safe and sound. No, we tripped and fell over their head.
So far, so
good. Everything over your head yesterday?
I went off the front step and hit my head twice on the two concrete steps. I am lucky to be here.
Oh, man.
Hard-headed.
Oh,
see
hard headed sometimes.
Yeah. You
want to
see the crack.
Oh, 10 minutes into it, we're already falling apart. All right. Okay, so we have a document before us. Judy,
the document before you. Let me tell you sort of the journey that this document has been on and to what's been happening since the last full council meeting on the 4th. Most of the changes that we needed to make in response to council comments were edits and clarification. We did need to do a little bit of new research, and that was on habitat loss, which was suggested by Member Hartwell during the meeting. So while I was working a bit on some of some formatting and other changes suggested by Mike, we had a team of folks from our working group go out and do some research on habitat loss, and that research should be in your packets as a one-pager. We made those initial edits, and then we sent the document over to Mary Hoff, and after a couple of days, I could see on our end some of the times that Mary Hoff was making her comments on the document, and I think she spent an entire weekend cuddled up with this document. And I came to the conclusion she doesn't charge enough for her services. It was an excellent, high-quality edit. Just a fantastic job in a very compressed time period. She then handed the document to Heather, who handed it off to Mike for a couple of days for him to take a look. And then we got some edits from Mike in addition that Heather and I spent the day on last Thursday, and then mailed that to you. Most of the changes, as I said, are more editorial rather than substantive. The big substantive change will be that habitat loss piece that we need to acknowledge. We've added a few charts and graphs to try to explain things better. We've also moved the conclusions that we formed from the entire set of data collection. Rather than making all of our conclusions in one section, we're moving the conclusions closer to the presentation of the data that they discuss. Kind of help people as they're going through each of the scenario descriptions to see what conclusions we formed from that data. And then we're repeating the same conclusions in one section to try to serve the needs of those types of folks who like to cut to the chase and they head straight to the conclusion section of a report and they skip the data presentation. So we're kind of trying to serve both audiences that way. So that's pretty much what's been happening since the 4th. And I was just wondering if you've got a chance to take a look at it. My first question for you would be the habitat loss piece. We sent that to Mary with a lot of our other changes, and it didn't make its way into the draft, perhaps because she didn't know what page to insert it on. And would like to know if we do put in an acknowledgement and an estimate of habitat loss, where you think it would fit well. It could go in the conservation estate section. It could be mentioned in the constraints and opportunities section, since habitat loss was the number one constraint mentioned there, or we could just wrap it into the conclusions piece of the report. So that's one question we had, and the other was just if you have any other comments or changes that you'd like before public comment period.
Okay. Darby or Jim and David, if you're on the phone with us yet, comments or questions of Judy, Heather, and company about the draft that you're looking at? So you're asking, there's a couple of things, I guess. One is for the habitat loss section that's newly drafted and is now contained in this errata sheet, where's
a good place to insert it?
Okay.
We would like a strong, it sounded like at the last council meeting they wanted a fairly strong acknowledgement that while the Outdoor Heritage Fund will be able to build a great deal, it might only be compensating for loss. And we're trying to figure out where's the best place to say that.
Right. Well, I mean, just at first blush, it appears that at least one logical place would be on page 14, where you talk about Minnesota's conservation estate. You define the habitat sections. You describe what they are. And you have then a series of maps. Mm-hmm. I would say in that section, we want to include this discussion. It shouldn't be an afterthought. It shouldn't be wait until the conclusions to talk about the counteracting forces of additional investment in habitat and conservation from the fund, but juxtapose that against the losses that you described here. I would also like to see something in the executive summary that really makes a summary of what you've drafted as in the errata sheet as a separate paragraph, maybe a short paragraph, but just says, in spite of these efforts, Minnesota has historically experienced considerable loss of habitat. You could cite a couple of the statistics, just so that it shows up in the executive summary as well as in the body of the report when we talk about the estate, because the estate is important, but those forces that are moving to expand that estate as well as contract that estate need to be described. And those are my thoughts. Darby, Jim, please. Darby?
Well, I think I, along with Jim, certainly was probably vocally concerned about the loss issue, but I'll tell you, after reading what you've got here, it became very clear to me that we really can't get here from there, or there from here. in the sense that, rather than lay out, presuming to the reader that we really have a good idea about that, I think that can do more harm than good. And I really sort of changed my mind. I think we absolutely need to have it in there. But the notion that we can have, sort of clean numerical values or even ranges of values in some cases just didn't seem appropriate. So I'm very satisfied, essentially, with less of a of an emphasis there than I really was back when we had a meeting.
Jim, I don't know if you have any thoughts on
that. Yeah, I just have a couple of questions. So this page 10, is this the entire, I mean, this is how it's going to be presented here, Judy? Is this?
No, the errata sheet, the footnote on page 10 has already been inserted into the document. That was just a better description of what the where the LSOHC sectional divisions came from. The piece we're trying to work in is the insert regarding habitat loss. And as noted, it could work in a couple of places.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just going to. So, where is this?
The same page.
It's about a quarter of the way down the sheet.
Yeah, it's further down that same page.
In bold.
So, page. I'm looking at page 10.
Yep, and go. Start on the third paragraph there, where it says insert regarding habitat loss.
This everything that follows here is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, page 10 here.
No, this is.
It's page 10.
It's the pagination change.
Hello, this is David Hartwell. I'm trying to call.
Hello, David.
Good afternoon, Dave. We're just beginning to discuss the most recent draft of the 25-year framework, and in particular the additional language that staff has put together regarding the loss of habitat that was requested at the council meeting here a couple weeks ago. So, David, you just joined us now.
Yep.
Okay, Judy, do you mind just restarting that just briefly? I don't have to go over every detail, just so that we're all up to speed. So we've got a document. You've got an errata sheet. David, do you have that sheet in front of you?
I did get the sheet, yeah.
Okay, so could you just explain where those pieces fit in or might fit in this document?
Welcome, David. Right now what we're talking about is that habitat loss estimate. As you might recall from the last meeting on the 4th, the only sort of substantive new research that we needed to go out and do was an estimate of habitat loss. And we have that on a separate sheet here. And we're just trying to figure out the best place to work it into the existing report draft. We would like that habitat loss recognized in a couple of places. What we had been discussing was a quick mention and acknowledgement of habitat loss in the executive summary, and then we would probably would insert the paragraphs with additional research on page 14 in the conservation estate section. So right around where you see the graph of the habitat by section and where you see the maps of where the habitat is, that might be a nice place to work in some additional research on how much habitat we're losing. Another idea I had, David, was also on page 37, where we talk about the loss of functioning systems and habitat as being the greatest organizational constraint that was mentioned by the organizations responding to our information requests, that we might also insert a cross-reference to the habitat loss paragraphs on page 14. Just so that people who want to see some actual data on that would be cross-referenced to that. And then finally, we might want to also work it into the conclusions, which start on page 39. So those were some places where I was thinking we needed to modify the report to include that habitat loss piece. You still there, David?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening.
Oh.
I am driving, so it's difficult for me to look at page 37 and 39.
Oh.
Don't look. Well, Jim or Darby, in terms of suggest, I like the idea that not only in the executive summary, but in the estate and then in the conclusions. So you identified four parts where parts, if not all of this, would show up. Jim?
I think also, and I think where it became most apparent in your presentation at the last meeting is these graphs you have on page 31, and I think Wayne made a good point. You know, most people are just going to look at this and breeze through this. But if you look at these graphs and see the acquisition we're going to do and the enhancement over the 25 years. People look at those graphs and are under the idea we're making these huge gains without having some kind of counterbalance to that or some baseline of what we're losing. So my suggestion would be there should be a graph included in this page 31 that is just some kind of a baseline loss of habitat. So people that are just browsing through can look and see that it's not just, we're not just moving in one direction here.
Jim, I'm seeing your point about the need for an acknowledgement of that, but as you look through the research that we did on habitat loss, the issue with doing a graph of that is that the estimates are all over the board.
Well, your estimates for acquisition, your estimates on the other two graphs are all over the board too, Judy.
Yeah.
They have just as much validity, probably more, than the information you have on these other two graphs.
If I may respond, Mr. Chair. The issue with the habitat loss numbers that we gave you, first of all, was the wide range. Second, a lot of that could be agriculture land included in those acreage numbers, so sort of separating out what is really good habitat land and what is land that really isn't supporting habitat to begin with that's being converted is another issue. And then these tables on the page are showing what's added to the publicly owned or permanently protected habitat estate or conservation estate versus habitat loss is coming from the privately owned side, which not to say it's not an unimportant loss, but there's a distinction between what's being added to and what's being taken away in terms of the ownership and permanent protection.
Jim? Peter, I mean, a couple things. If you do this graph, all you have to do is just explain what's in it. Just say this is loss of wetlands, this is loss of grasslands, this is loss of, you don't have to make it all inclusive. You could just describe which entities you are putting on the graph here. And now, if I understood you, these two graphs on 31, these are not just our contributions, these are the contributions of the public, I mean other entities as well.
The graphs on page 31 are in the current trajectory, so that's just what's possible with the outdoor heritage.
Okay, so I didn't understand Peter's point then. He said it has included the public land.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Jim, the graphs on 31 are showing what's being added back to the publicly protected or permanently protected conservation estate.
And just from the outdoor heritage?
Mm-hmm. Correct. And my point was that the habitat loss is showing, well, it's not showing habitat loss, it's showing lands being converted to development, whether they be agriculture, forest, wetlands, grasslands, that are not necessarily, or probably unlikely to be in the conservation estate. So I'm making a distinction in the conservation estate in terms of the additions are going into the publicly protected or permanently protected side, while the losses are coming out of the non-publicly protected permanently side. Could be obviously private holdings that are being developed.
And so I'm not sure what difference does that distinction make? I mean, what? So what? I guess my question would be.
Well, it goes back to sort of the composition of the habitat loss in terms of you're adding real habitat while the loss is a mixture of probably mostly agriculture and other land that really does not have great value.
But again,
for habitat or conservation.
If you made the graph and the graph said this is our loss of wetlands, this is our loss of grasslands, this is our loss of forest land, you know, that information is all readily available. Just describe that in the graph that this is, it's just these entities. It's not, okay. It's not ag land, it's not whatever.
So just to help maybe move this discussion along, I'm looking at the second page of your errata sheet, and I was trying to find your point, Peter, which is of all these changes, some of this is agricultural land being developed, so it's really not habitat in the first place, so we really can't call it loss of habitat because it was never that in the first place. Mm-hmm. And what Jim is saying, let's try to find those pieces of habitat that we have even an estimate of what might be possible. So if I look at the second bullet from the top on the second page, it says from year 1990 to 2000, it talks about changes in urban areas, which is not what we're interested in, but it says agricultural lands, okay, we're not interested in that. It says grass and wetlands decreased by 41,000 acres annually and waters by 22,800, I think, acres is supposed to be annually. Is that kind of, would that be those? So could we, for example, I mean, we would have to footnote it, but could you put a dashed line below each of these graphs when we talk about, you know, additional protection that might suggest just a very linear trend downward based on these numbers, just to show that, and with a footnote saying that these are just, you know, projected based on 1990 to 2000 losses in wetlands and grasslands, what, you know, as a counterbalancing force, just to suggest. Does that seem to make sense? Or?
Yeah, as long as it's pretty clear that this really is, these are not particularly precise, and we really, you know, we're really conveying the true situation as opposed to getting people to think that those numbers are really hard.
But I guess I'd like to ask Peter and Judy and Heather, does that make sense? Would that, I mean, what we don't want to do is mislead the reader in terms of these numbers. We want to convey the fact that in spite of our best attempts, we may be losing this type of habitat. We're using those numbers, and if we could find a forest really has been fairly stable. Mm-hmm. If you, as you looked at the numbers, we aren't losing forest land in a great amount, not like we are with grasslands and wetlands. Would those numbers, are those the right numbers?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that's an excellent idea between what Jim and I were talking about, clarified our positions. The one concern that the working group had was just these numbers are all coming from the late 80s, 90s, which were really economic growth times, a lot of development, and you know, projecting to the future is not as certain. We can certainly do a range like we did for the scenarios.
And you could footnote. I mean, you could show a dashed line going down saying where it came from and just say this was extrapolated from a period of time that experienced high economic growth, which means, you know, interpret it as you may. It means it may mean that the loss may be less than what we're suggesting. It may be that it is more. We don't know. Does that, Jim, get at you?
It does, and I think just maybe because of our mandate, which says we could use the landscapes that, you know, we've been asked to, you know, was it prairies, forests, wetlands, mm-hmm. just use those four, what was it, three or four landscapes as your basis for losses.
I think that's an excellent idea, rather than just every acre that's being developed, which our research kind of more focused on in terms of.
So then a question to you, Peter, and I guess to all three of you. Would we do this on page 31, because this is enhance and restore, or should we really be talking about protection? Or both. So that I don't have an answer to that. That's a question. Should any counterbalancing loss be really focused on the protection piece, which is trying to add to our conservation estate? And then maybe what you could do on the enhanced restore is to footnote the fact that we are losing losses, but graphically you could not only footnote but show a decline in the protection part. Mm-hmm. So in spite of our attempts to protect an additional 80,000 acres a year of habitat, we're losing X acres of wetlands and grasslands habitat per year based on 1990 to 2000 rates. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, and Mike, if I can jump in.
Please.
One of the things you mentioned, forests, we're not losing forests. What we've been facing with forests is the fragmentation due to the sale of the large timber companies to people who are dividing up that land. And while on a graph you can't really show that, we should footnote that fragmentation is a huge issue from a wildlife habitat standpoint in our forest.
That's a really good point, David. So really it's parcelization of the land, which is the fragmentation of the ownership, which then oftentimes does lead to fragmentation of the habitat. So parcelization is the subdivision of the ownership of the land base, and then because of that, we oftentimes see development occurring which fragments the habitat, the forest itself. So we should add that as a bullet in our discussion of loss. That's a really good point, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, you throw a road into a 40-acre parcel and then clear an acre and a half for a cabin lot, the effect is much greater than the 2 acres that you actually took the forest down from a natural process.
So given the changes you guys have been taking notes, does that seem to work for everyone, Jim and Darby?
I'm just wondering if, in addition to adding that estimate as a dotted line on the graphs on page 31, if we also would add that to the current graph on page 27.
Yeah, so actually...
So the same dotted line would be on the protection graphs for both the historical scenario and the current trajectory?
Yep. That would make sense. I guess that's what I was thinking.
And since Pete is the graphmeister, I'm trying to see, can we get that done in a day or...
Just if I could add on to what you said. Mr. Chair, you were talking about restoration enhancement. That's probably another thing we didn't look at in terms of how many acres each year of publicly owned land is degrading because... So our report never really talks about quality, even in the whole conservation estate, an acre is an acre in terms of its conservation benefit, and we never really got into the quality. We talked quantity, not quality, and more just your information on how we approach it.
This is just simply pointing out a real lack of information around conservation on a comprehensive statewide basis. There's no one who's anymore doing a lot of work on that. It's very unfortunate. It makes it difficult to undertake efforts like this plan in that kind of a void.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just one more question of clarification. We understand the graph piece. Do you also want the presentation of the other habitat loss data on page 14? In addition to the modifications to the graph,
yes,
or instead of?
A footnote. Of some sort. I don't think you need to repeat everything you're going to dump on page 14. And you're saying in reference to each of the graphs?
Yeah, and the graph piece is a nice idea, but do you also want a presentation of these bullet points on page 14 with more qualitative data on habitat loss?
Yes.
Okay. Didn't know if it was an either or a not only, but also.
No, also.
I think you have to put the foundation for the information on the graph in the report.
Right. So I have... Oh, Jim.
No, go ahead.
Well, for example, on page 7, I note there are a couple places where there's date in brackets. For example, right at the last bullet on page 7 under internal and external review. Now, I'm assuming that will be cleaned up. Something will go in there before we release it for public comment.
Those are the dates of the public comment period, so we didn't want to presuppose what those were.
Okay. Okay, Jim.
Yeah, Judy, I'm kind of confused on this goals, opportunities, and constraints. Page 42, the last paragraph, new and non-traditional program strategies are necessary to be successful. Given the continued degradation, loss of functioning systems, and the challenges of achieving a positive net conservation benefit, it may be necessary to adapt existing programs or create entirely new conservation programs. Some examples are Working Lands Initiative, Minnesota Bird Recovery Project, or efforts to recruit farmers as land stewards to providing incentives for diverse prairie-based biofuels. This would imply increased risk and awards and increased need for monitoring and adaptive management. Okay, whose goals? I mean, this is not the council's.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cox, no, these were the conclusions that our working group drew from the data collection and from what they were seeing in the discussion of goals, opportunities, and constraints from the people who responded to our information request. And given what people were telling us about the challenges of habitat loss and also their challenges on the human side of the equation with their workforces, our group came to the conclusion that with those opportunities and constraints added together, that some non-traditional new approaches would be necessary. So that was their conclusion.
Okay, so, I mean, it's outside of what we asked, you to do. and it's really not, it's not something that the council has discussed or talked over or come to any conclusion on. So I'm kind of curious as why this is part of our 25-year plan, because, I mean, some of this, you know, if I understand it, isn't going to be possible with, you know, our constitutional mandate for the most part. And this other habitat goals reported include long-term health of the land and ecosystems, protection, improvement, and restoration. I'm on page 36, first paragraph. In riparian areas, numerous strategies were identified for achieving these goals, including actively managing ecosystems, working to preserve biological diversity, and controlling the spread of non-native invasive species. Well, now you're getting into language that, I mean, put this whole council into disarray over the last legislative session. I mean, this is something that I don't think belongs in our 25-year plan. It's certainly nothing the council has discussed or come to any kind of decision on. So I just don't understand why this is part of our 25-year plan. It's certainly not the council's work. It's not something the council supports or something the council has discussed. So I guess my question is, why is it part of our plan? This is somebody else's work, not our work.
Bill.
As a possible resolution to this problem, can you go through and delete, extract, and delete the conclusions of the working group that, and put those in a transmittal letter to the council? Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Becker, certainly we could do that. What I'm wondering about is, rather than deleting all of the conclusions that we formed from the data collection, some of which, you know, had to do with, you know, when you put it all together, you're not going to be able to meet your targets, which is just a simple numerical conclusion. You know, you add up the numbers, compare them, we conclude you're not going to meet your targets. Some of the more, say, value-based conclusions that start under options for consideration on page 41. Another option would be is at your December 6th meeting, if you would like to review the options for consideration and see which of those options are options that you want to move forward as a council. These were just conclusions that our working group formed from reviewing the data. They wanted to put their conclusions forward to you. And it's sort of at a point now where the council needs to decide which of its conclusions from the data that it wants to forward to the LCC.
Barry?
Well, it seems to me that that whole section, options for consideration, are really part of a context. I don't see them as having being directives to the council. And we're really not talking about a plan here. We're talking about a framework. And I think there really is a pretty basic difference between the two. And if, you know, Jim, if it would help to really clarify, in fact, that this is where that information came from, that sort of distances itself from council actions, but is retained as part of the context within which all of this is happening.
Mr. Chair, if I might clarify to Darby's comment, when Judy and I sat down to re-edit the document last week, one of the suggestions that I had was that we condense some of the titles that were in the original draft that you saw at the last council meeting. So I think part of the issue might have been that as we collapsed some of these categories, it was not always clear from which data set the conclusion was drawn. And so, to your point, Darby, originally these were associated with particular aspects of the constraints or opportunities questionnaire that we had received back from the participating respondents. So I'm not sure if reinserting that solves that issue, but I just want to reiterate what Judy said, is that these are not, these conclusions were drawn from those data sets directly.
I got a suggestion for you. So I'm looking at the report, and I'm going through page scenario one, starting on 26, nice description of the first scenario. Then I go to page 29, the second scenario, the current trajectory, and then on page 33, the maximize scenario. Then you have a one bullet summary finding from scenario three. My suggestion is that then you move immediately after that to the conclusions. And I'm not sure I'd call them options for consideration. I would just title that next section immediately, conclusions. And then I look at some of your bullets. You'd like for the first one, under scenario two, you just, I mean, just very factually say that under scenario two, the Outdoor Heritage Fund could almost double the prehistoric protection efforts and so forth. So those are interpretations going back to the three scenarios. And then that's where the report ends. And then you take the goals, opportunities, and constraints, and then some of those other things in that conclusion section that are really, you know, from the working group members, and put that as appendix, another appendix. So in other words, you have the three scenarios and then a conclusion and some conclusions from your observations of the three scenarios. And then in the appendices, you include this next section, which is the goals, opportunities, and constraints, and say where that came from, that this is the working group. As part of surveying folks, you ask them what some of the biggest challenges were. The material still stays there, but it's not in the body of the report. And then the same thing with the management and planning and management for results. I mean, it seems to me that that's a nice piece, but it really is adjunct to our framework. It's something that the working group put together, and I think, to steal Jim's words, we didn't really have a hand in that. But you could certainly include that as an appendix for consideration. Does that seem to work for folks?
Except that the appendices are generally notable for not being read, or typically, I mean, it's a common reaction.
Dave, are you still with us?
Still with you.
Okay. I know it's tough to follow along when you're driving in tough weather and you don't have a document in front of you. Any thoughts, at least from what you've heard? I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you have something, any observations, we welcome them.
Well, I have to say, without the document to page through, it's really tough to feel like I have a great contribution to this discussion.
I guess my concern is that the hard work you guys did in describing these three scenarios, that really is the framework. I mean, when all is said and done, that lays out three potential trajectories. And that really needs to be bound up as something. And we've got a lot of other stuff that the working group did, and I don't want to make any judgments whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, but I think we somehow need to separate that other working group information as, you know, somehow in the report. And I, to be quite honest, I'd be very happy deferring to your judgment about how to do that. I've given you a suggestion. You know, you've heard Darby's concern that we don't want to lose those things, but I think Jim's point is really good. We as a council have never talked about a management, results management framework. We're not saying that's bad. It's just the council really never has put its imprint at all on that. We're given a draft that all of a sudden had that. Mm-hmm. And so maybe putting that at the level in an appendix and maybe referencing in the executive summary those pieces and saying where they came from so people can be guided to those.
Okay.
I don't want to lose it. I just want to make sure that we don't confuse what the framework's charge was versus this other information.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think Jim's point, the thing that piqued my interest and I hadn't picked up on it was the invasive species. I mean, as a group, we have not sort of weighed in other than to say we were somewhat dismayed that Emerald Ash Borer became part of our program without a discussion of the council. So for us to go on record as saying that's a great thing in this document since we haven't had the discussion, I think Jim's right in that.
Bill?
having looked through the document to understand your suggestion, Mr. Chair, I think it really strengthens the document to move the information beginning on page 35 and ending on page 38 to an appendix that then highlights the conclusions and has them follow, conclusions beginning on page 39, mm-hmm. has them following the scenarios, and then move the information on page 41 beginning with options for consideration to that same appendix that is a message from the working group, not that title, I hope, but working group comments. I think it clarifies things a great deal and strengthens the framework side of the discussion.
And I guess I want to make sure Darby's point isn't lost, that somehow in the executive summary, you know, as you describe the process, the information you collected, I guess I'd like to have you reference what we've moved or would move to the appendix, just so that even in the executive summary, the reader knows that there is a results management framework that the advisory committee has suggested for consideration, as well as the information that they collected from the different conservation organizations about constraints and opportunities. Does that work for you, Darby?
So if I understand, both the results management framework and the qualitative data collection under the goals, opportunities, and constraints, all of those would be moved to appendix material or would be removed from the draft report altogether?
No,
appendix. There's important stuff in there.
Okay.
Shortage of staffing and human capital, that's where we find that. That has to be in the report somewhere.
Yep.
But it's not a focus of the framework.
Right, and what makes sense about that is those three scenarios and the conclusions that we draw directly from the numbers, those were our core deliverables as a working group. And the results management framework and the contextual data we collected were sort of our extra credit.
Yep.
Where we said, you know, as long as we're asking people for all this acreage information, let's ask them a few questions about what are your goals, what are your opportunities, what's constraining you, so we could get some nice contextual information to wrap around those numbers. So it wouldn't feel just like, well, here are your numbers, have a nice day.
Right.
So there's still some important information on the what those organizations are telling us they're facing in the future. But as you said, that's not our core deliverable. Our core deliverable is that framework of numerical estimates. So we can set that off.
I think that's a game plan.
Okay.
Anything else, members, about what we have in front of us? I think this has been a really good discussion. I guess I'd like to hear about, assuming that this is the totality of changes, at least they've let it go out for public, I don't say review, but whatever. Can you give us a sense of how that's going to unfold and who's going to do what and how the public might comment or whatever?
I'm glad you asked because I have a little schedule here.
All right.
And I didn't want to pass it out and presuppose that you were okaying.
And so given David is driving, we'll want to be very detailed and maybe describing to him as well what the schedule is.
Okay. We were hoping to get your approval to go out for public review today. So if we take a look at the 22nd, we wanted to post tomorrow. Given the number of changes we make in the document, that might not happen tomorrow. It might happen Wednesday. But we would try our best to get posted for public comment before Thanksgiving. We're not counting Thanksgiving Day or the day after Thanksgiving as public comment days. We don't think people will enjoy their turkey and read the report. So by our count of public comment days, those the 25th and the 26th are not. So if we head out, we can have 8 days of public comment, including the date of your December 6th meeting. We would give you an update on how things are going at the December 6th meeting. We should have a number of comments already in. I should back up and let you know we already have a web survey drafted for the public comment. It's already up on a website. It's pretty much ready to go. We have copies of what that web survey looks like if you'd like to take a look at that as well. On the 7th, we were thinking of wrapping up public comments so that we could FedEx those comments to you on the 8th, so that you'd all be able to read them for a couple of days. before your meeting on the 15th. One question I had for you is on, is this public comment or public review? We were wondering, do we need to make changes to the report based on the public comments, or are we simply receiving, summarizing, and providing those to you? If we would need to make changes to the draft in response to those public comments, we would need to do those in sometime on the 7th or the 8th. It doesn't leave us much of a time window.
You won't know if you're going to change anything until you review the public comments. There may be great comments, and there may be nothing. I don't think you can predetermine that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree, David.
Ms. Brew, how does 8 business days stack up in the world of public input comment review?
I don't actually know. We don't usually put our reports up for.
I'm going to turn and see if.
It's usually 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Probably a minimum of 2 weeks. So I think that's sufficient.
I would suggest that we leave the comment period open through the 10th of December, let you report back on what you're hearing on the 6th, and come on the 16th, or the 15th, excuse me, with a, or in preparation for the 15th, have a final copy.
Okay.
So I think that's a really good suggestion. I don't want this council to be criticized for trying to move this through too fast. And given some extra days, it's not a long document to read, and we're not looking for someone to do editing, but we're looking for if we hit kind of the essence of what a framework might look like. And I'm sure we're going to get different opinions on that, but giving the public a few extra days to look at it and provide us comments will only help.
Second, I was wondering, Mr. Chair and members of the Executive Committee, would you like to review the public comment questions? Those are being passed around. This is the web survey that we've drafted.
I see.
It's fairly simple. Are there any points in the draft unclear to you or require more explanation? Please.
Okay, excuse me, Judy, just to clarify for David's sake, so when someone goes to the LaSard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council website, they click on the draft 25-year framework, and and there's a link to provide input or comment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, now we're at a point where here's what you're asking them to comment.
There's a hyperlink to the plan, and then there's a hyperlink to our web survey format. And we can collect those comments daily if we need to. So simply, who are you? What's your email address? Would you like your email address added to the Sard Sam's listserv? Are you writing on behalf of an organization? If so, let us know. And then just general comments. Is anything unclear to you? Do you have any comments on the conservation estate or the scenarios? Do you have any comments on opportunities, constraints, or report conclusions? And how well will the report serve the council and the legislature? So pretty simple.
I would suggest on question 7 that you delete opportunities.
Considering the discussion we just had.
Right.
Any comments on the report conclusions?
I think this looks good with that change.
Okay.
I like that. Jim?
I have one other change I'd like to bring up. On page 42, on the second paragraph, three-quarters of the way down, it says, while the LSOHC's decision to front-load acquisition may make sense economically, the acquisitions come at a time of generational shift in the conservation workforce. I'd like that sentence stricken from the SART Council has made no decision to front-load acquisition.
So we would end that paragraph right where after the word needed.
Yes.
Okay.
Would you want the piece that says the strategy would ensure adequate human resources for legal and process work? That whole piece?
Yeah, I suppose that would be okay to keep in, because you are referencing the word strategy comes up in the sentence prior to the stricken sentence.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious, where did that come from? Did that just come from an individual on the task or work group?
The data line.
That sentence about kind of the front load acquisition. Because I can concur with Jim. I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't remember, but I thought maybe you knew that there was a specific point of discussion.
No, I think the working group was generally of the impression that the council had put an emphasis on acquisition in its first 2 years, just as we looked at the numbers of what the decisions have been. And if that hasn't been a conscious priority.
No, in fact, we've been treated, there are more acres that are not an order of, well, there might be an order of magnitude difference in enhanced restore acres than protected acres.
Okay.
Except for the large legacy easement. For wetlands and grasslands, prairies for sure.
Okay.
Any other comments or changes, suggestions? Jim?
If we could just go over again what this rearrangement is going to look like again so we're all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, I thought you captured it quite well, so maybe you take a look at your notes.
Beginning on page 35, the section that is titled Goals, Opportunities, and Constraints, the text underneath the title on page 35, 36, 37, through the bottom of 38 will be moved to the first part of an appendix. The information on page 39, conclusions and opportunities for consideration, through page 40 to the middle of page 41, right above options for consideration, will be retained as the final section of the framework.
And let me just add, that should just say conclusions, because the opportunities for consideration mm-hmm. will be moved. Okay.
The options for consideration on page 41 and 42, as edited in the last comment, will be moved to the second part of that appendix that deals with Appendix A.
Yeah, and then the part two started on 43, which will be another separate appendix. That's the management, planning and managing for results.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. That'll be an appendix two.
So rather than the thing called a part two, have that planning and managing for results as another appendix.
And with that, we've gone full circle with that section.
That's a little inside joke there. But that section has been in a number of places during the draft.
It's the orphan section?
It's the where do we put it section.
Any other comments? This has been a really good discussion, and again, I just want to make sure we're clear that we're doing here, we're just trying to clarify the legislative mandate to the council to develop this framework and the other ancillary data, which is supportive and is helpful, but we need to make sure in the document there's a distinction between the two.
If we're okay on, Mr. Chairman, if we're okay on the public comment period and the modifications to the report as requested, I just have one more question about your December 6th meeting.
Yes.
Is if you want some time on the agenda to form any of your own conclusions to this report. Or if you just want an update on the 6th.
I think my own personal feeling is, given the changes we've made today, an update as to what we're hearing for public comments is really where we should go. If council members want to talk about specific things given the new format, we can do that. But I think the focus should be on what are we hearing, and is there anything that's coming back? And to help prepare that, we need to make sure that any changes here, obviously all council members have this, and maybe this most current version, so they know that this isn't going out, but in a reorganized version of this is going out.
Mm-hmm.
Darby?
I just had a couple of typos, I think, and I don't know if you want to hear those now. I can show it afterwards.
Sure.
Page 7, fourth line, forget about the development framework, the fourth line of text. I think you want to get rid of the words on the far right-hand edge of that fourth line, project lead. I don't understand what project lead meant. Maybe it's this group met in January 2010. NAB, the House State's in-house management consulting group, to discuss developing.
Yep.
And then if you go to page 26, that's third line again below the heading. Fourth word in from the right-hand edge. The word is, I think, should not be there. I think you want may. Just keep the may.
This is Professor Nelson coming through. And reading and grading college papers, I think.
This lets us know they actually read every word. So we appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, and Member Darby, we have an award in our division called the Golden Paperclip Award. You get it today. Eagle eyes.
All right, so on that point, put a period after the word entity on page 26, just to one-up Darby here. On the first bullet, it ends with just hanging there.
Oh.
Oops, I missed
that. Shame.
We get two awards today.
Anything else, Darby? Great. David, do you have any further thoughts or comments?
No.
Great. Anything else, Jim?
Nope.
All right. So with that, we would be entertaining a motion to approve the document with the changes made to go out for public review. And that's it.
So moved.
So moved. Any further discussion on that motion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. So great. Great work. Thank you. This is really getting down to the wire, so this is looking great. All right, members, the last item for our discussion this afternoon, and it's just discussion, is a preliminary peek at the appropriations bill that we are going to be seeing on the 15th, I believe, of December.
The 6th.
The 6th, all right, for action on the 15th.
Final action on the 15th.
Okay. Bill, the floor is yours.
You have in your packet a document titled Bill Draft 411, Section Version 5. Let me start right out the chute with the correction on the total appropriation. 2012, which is shown as $86 million, should be $86,470,000. And 2013 is $470,000. $470 is the administrative account per fiscal year. We're asking for two fiscal years of administration. I wanted to point out, as a, by way of example, in the bottom of page one, in the last paragraph, the paragraph that begins with a list, the second sentence, the third sentence of that paragraph authorizes the use of Outdoor Heritage Fund for easement monitoring, management, and enforcement funds. We've discussed this briefly. This is on the advice of council. We place that in there. I'm going to skip through here pretty quickly and go to page 5 to highlight another issue that's come up and is of concern. Item 3B, the LaSalle Lake Protecting Critical Mississippi Headwaters Habitat. I wanted to show you where there is a relief valve in the event that project doesn't go through and how it's working. And it's the last sentence in that appropriation. If the acquisition is not completed by January 31st, 2012, the money under this paragraph is available for acquisition under Subdivision 2, Paragraph A. And if you refer back to Subdivision 2, Paragraph A, you'll find that that's the WMASNA Prairie Bank Easement Acquisition Phase 3. One other thing that we've done in titling these appropriations is where they are continuations of earlier years. We've noted phase one, phase two, phase two, and phase three, with the idea that this will help us in discussing with the legislature the council's concept of investing in programs as opposed to one-time projects as much as possible.
So you're saying, Bill, that after 25 years of this fund, we could have phase 25 for some of these core programs.
I think that's true. Okay.
Can I go back to your first point on the bottom of page one and the top of page two about maybe used to establish a monitoring, management, and enforcement fund as approved in the accomplishment plan? So does that statement alone creates the authority to establish this account?
It creates the authority to take the money from the fund and put it in the account.
Okay.
So in a sense, yes, it is the authority to establish the account.
So we say fund, but is that fund with a capital F, or should that say account? You say monitoring, management, and enforcement fund.
These are not funds within account. These are not accounts within the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
So small F.
Yes.
Got it. All right.
Yes. Any more comment on that particular point? On page 7, Shallow Lake Shoreline Protection Program, Wild Rice Lakes. This is an example of a program that you've approved and an accomplishment plan that divides the funds between three entities. And you'll see in the center of that particular appropriation that we've actually, in the law, divided it out. This is to avoid the situation where you would have an appropriation within an appropriation and the legislature had not voted on that particular allocation of dollars.
So, Bill, just to clarify, are there other places in the appropriations bill where that occurs, where there are partners and we are enumerating who gets what out of that appropriation?
Absolutely. I don't have them all listed, but as an example, beginning at the bottom of page 8, Metro Big Rivers.
Yeah, that was one that you wanted.
Oh, yeah. Then I want to go to page 11. This is an important change that you all should know about. And it's in the Conservation Partners grants. The first change was a recommendation from the meeting that we had with the grants committee. There was not a quorum there, but there was significant discussion. And if you look midway down the column on page 11, it says, for grant applications up to $25,000, the commissioner shall provide a separate, simplified application process. So we're trying to get the Department of Natural Resources to make it a little easier for groups to come in and get the funds if there's asking for small amounts. And then the next sentence is important. The criteria for evaluating grant applications over $25,000 must include an order of preference. That should be in order of precedence. And what that does is effectively hold the under $25,000 grants harmless from that long list of criteria that we developed, which is part of the foundation for the Department of Natural Resources complex application system, and leaves the criteria that are remaining for these under $25,000 grants the Constitution as it's restated in this appropriation. On page 13, subdivision 7, we authorize restoration and enhancement, in subdivision 7, the last sentence. Funds appropriated for fee title acquisition of land may be used to restore, enhance, and provide for the public use of land acquired with the appropriation. Public use facilities must have minimal impact on habitat on acquired lands. And this is to try to get some control over the parking lot issue. Make sure that they don't pave or do extensive development, but just minimal development. And if you stop and think about a DNR parking lot, it really amounts to two runs of the fence about 40 feet deep into the wildlife management area, a pipe and a culvert and some fill, and that's about what they do.
So, Bill, just on that page, you've got a F fiscal year 10 appropriation is zero. Why is that even mentioned?
That's an error.
Oh, okay.
imagine that was a result of putting the 470 on page 12 in the second year. And then the rest of it is pretty much what we've had, with the exception of page 20, where section 3, we're amending the laws of 2009, our first recommendation. We're amending specifically the section dealing with forests, and we're authorizing DNR to put $750,000 of the appropriation in a maintenance, monitoring, and enforcement fund.
Bill, would that be separate from the fund that was referenced back on page 3? Or would that be a contribution to that account or fund, or however?
In the DNR, it would be into the same fund, and they would be required to account for it. Obviously, if it were a fund that was set up by Minnesota Land Trust or Ducks Unlimited, it would not be in the same fund. And then on page 21, there's an amendment to 97A.056. to address the issue of terms of members. As you know, because of the way 97A.056 was written on July the 3rd at noon, it's kind of like midnight at Cinderella's ball. Everybody disappears whose term is over with. This basically allows members to continue to serve until their positions are filled or reappointments take place, thus making transition a little bit easier.
So, Bill, just because the first sentence in that subdivision, you talk about the legislative members now will serve for, it's not a commission, but it's a council, but for
right.
two-year terms. So then back on paragraph 6, and 7, which references the public, excuse me, 7, two members from the Senate ending in January 2013, and two members from the House in January 2015. We really don't need that anymore, except where the members, where their appointments come from.
We can delete that. It has no effect.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else, Bill, in terms of things to bring to our attention at this point?
The only other thing to bring to the Executive Council's attention is the discussion in the LCCMR hearing meeting last week on NGO acquisition of land and public approval or approval by counties. And the members of the Legislative Citizens Committee or County Commission on Minnesota Resources, for the first time discovered that NGOs did not have to get county board approval, and it's my understanding that it's the intent of the commission to put language requiring county board approval of NGO purchases of property that is destined to become state wildlife management areas under the 97A.145, I believe it is, which is the Wetlands for Wildlife statute that requires county board approval for the purchase of property that includes wetlands.
That's only for environmental trust fund expenditures?
Yes. Their law presumably will apply only to ENTF. I suppose I could write it broader than that. We'll have to monitor it. It will raise the question about our acquisitions.
Darby, David, Jim, any questions, comments about what we see? Jim?
So, up to this point in NGOs, even in their regular acquisitions, maybe outside the environmental trust fund, never had to get that approval. Why is it becoming an issue now, and why is that becoming an issue? I don't understand that.
It's becoming an issue because members of the commission were under the impression that approval was being obtained. So they misunderstood what was happening.
So if the Nature Conservancy, through other means, acquired property, which was going to be turned over to the Department of Natural Resources, as a SNA or whatever, they would have to get county approval. But if they use trust fund money, then they would have to get approval.
That is my understanding of what they intend to put into their law. I think that there's a corollary to my response to your first question, and that is not only did members of the commission not understand what was going on, but they held a concern that they would be part and parcel of an attempt to get around state law by using NGOs, and didn't want to be part and parcel of that. I'm on thin ice here. I'm expressing what other people think, which is not a good thing to do. But as best I can surmise it, I think that that was what was going on.
Darby? David, any other comments? So, Bill, the council will have a walkthrough of this bill in a more, I guess, finalized version on the 6th without action for comments, input, suggested changes, then would come back on the 15th for action. Is that correct?
Right. And then we would assume that the council would authorize staff to work with the reviser.
Okay. Any last order of business on the appropriations bill? Okay, hearing none, we've completed our work for the day. Any final business that we need to take care of? Staff? Members? Okay, if not, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make that motion.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you so much.